Greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. It's Thursday. It's noon Eastern. So you know what time it is. That means it's time for A to A. And what a timely guest we have here, and I'm really grateful for it. Brent Cook is somebody that I've known now for a couple of years, and he is really the preeminent independent mining analyst geologist out there. His company, his website is called Exploration Insights. He's been at that now for almost 10 years, but his entire career has been spent breaking rocks, doing some exploration, doing analysis, and Exploration Insights now is, at least in my mind, it is the preeminent mining sector newsletter that you can get. And so Brent is very generous with his time to come by here and give us his opinion on really any mining company we want to ask him about. So this is a real treat to talk to him again. Brent, thanks so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you, Terry, and thanks for that introduction. That was pretty damn nice.
Remember, you can call me Craig. It's okay. But you can call me Turd if you want. You know, my mother even calls me Turd. She does.
I can believe it.
And it's pretty funny. 83-year-old, nice little old lady calls me Turd. what can you do? All right, before we get started, again, I just think the world of your work as an independent analyst, but tell everybody about where they find Exploration Insight, how much it costs, and what they get for it.
Right, Exploration Insights is a newsletter. Comes out more or less, or comes out every Sunday, plus any alerts or comments that happen during the week on companies we're following or buying and that sort of thing. The letter is now comprised of myself. I'm an economic geologist, been doing this for decades. Worked with Rick Rule as his mining analyst prior to that out of Carlsbad. I've worked with most of the major mining companies as a consultant. Been involved in bank audits, feasibility studies, all the way down to exploration and run a junior company myself. What I really like to get into is the exploration stage. That's our focus, is early stage discoveries. And I partnered up with Joe Mazumder about a year and a half ago. Joe is another economic geologist. He's got more of the money side of it. He was an analyst with a couple of groups out of Canada. Got a couple of degrees, one from the University of, or the School of Mines in Colorado, and one from Townsville, Australia. So he's got a good background as well. And the two of us scour the world looking for new ideas. And the letter's about what we're doing with our money. And that's it. No one pays us to say anything. We don't take any compensation of any sort, except from subscribers and what we make or lose off of our investments. The letter comes out, like I said, about every Sunday. It's $140 US a month, and for that you're getting two top economic geologists.
Yeah.
Oh, and that website is explorationinsights.com.
If, I mean, $140 a month, people are kind of doing the math on that and going, geez, that's $1,800 a year or whatever, $1,700 a year. You know, all you got to do is have one lousy pick, and you're down more than $1,700. So any help you can get in that, you know, if you really like the sector, if you think they offer leverage on the metals and you expect the metals to rise, I mean, again, this is a the best objective, unbiased analysis you can find. So it's Brent, I'm just happy to call you a friend and so thankful that you could you stop by here every once in a while. Before we get to the specific stocks, and I know you're always real good just to offer your opinion. If you don't have an opinion, you know, you just say, look, I don't know, and that's valuable as well. I just want to ask you about the sector in general. I've got this theory, in a sense, that capitulation in the metals and the shares finally happened late last year. And what I mean by that is not a price. You know, people associate capitulation with price, you know, this washout, blood in the streets, maximum losses and stuff. Well, price is just an extension of sentiment. So to me, capitulation is sentiment. And I think last year just beat the living daylights out of people, because after 4 years of being down, we finally had this massive rally. But if you weren't in the shares, like I was fortunate enough to be, you know, in January of last year, you didn't get excited about them until maybe June, you know, because you thought the whole way up, oh, it's just another fake out. Oh, it's just another fake out. And finally, in June, people start buying them in, and then, of course, the rug gets pulled out from under us and everybody gets washed out again. And so I think that just really crushed the sector in general, whether people follow the shares or the metals. And now here we are this year, the HUI's up about 10%, struggling to kind of break out. Anyway, do you agree with that? Do you think maybe we're set to roll a little bit from here? I've seen stuff about margins at some of the senior producers that are the best they've been since 2012, just the sector in general, Brent, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think what you've just described is what's happened. It makes sense to me, and it's what I've seen as well. I mean, from 2011 until 15, late 15, I was negative. We were buying very few things, and the market just kept going down. In November of 15, I brought Joe on about a month early, and then things picked up at the beginning of 16. We saw a good rise in the sector in general, and I'm focused on the junior sector, and then it backed off again. What this reminds me of is what happened after the last big bust, which was 1997 to 2001. It just got crushed, as bad or worse than this time. And we saw a rise come out of that into 2002. And I think what we saw was the people that were left for the shares were just happy to get anything for them.
Yeah.
And we're selling into that, and it leveled off. And I think we're at the point now where we're going to see the sector start to take off. And there's a reason for that. It's not just psychology per se. I think what we're seeing is the major mining companies do not have enough reserves to replace what they're mining. And that's really important. And we've seen a change in sentiment in the major miners this year. You know, they're putting money into juniors via placements or joint ventures. This year alone, the majors have put $300 million into the junior sector. That tells you that they're starting to recognize that looking down the road 5-10 years from now, they can't replace what they're mining. That's a really good sign. Second thing I've seen happening is that companies are starting to get a positive reaction, they put out good news. And that hasn't happened for a while either. So the retail sector is out there, and people are watching, and they're jumping on things that look like they might be a discovery. And discoveries are going to be really valuable, legitimate ones. So that's I agree. I think we're set for a nice market going forward over the next few years. It will be volatile, but I think it's going up.
Yeah, that's kind of about the way I see it too. Excuse me, and if we get the metals themselves to help out, you know, like Keith Newmyer always talks about, every dollar that silver goes up, it's like $18 million to their bottom line. I mean, you can just imagine, you know, extrapolate that out to some of the other juniors or some of the seniors, a rising price could really help. And with every other equity sector being overvalued, yeah, you know, maybe we get some flows into the sector in general.
I think so.
All right, I want to ask you one other thing that I think is interesting, and how this might help the sector as well. I mean, we're seeing these tremendous rallies now in the base and the industrial metals. You know, copper seems to be breaking out from about a 3 or 4 year downtrend. Zinc, you name it, go across the board. Aluminum, they all seem to be wanting to really start to take off. And so, do you think? I guess particularly as, you know, we talk about zinc or copper, because a lot of silver is mined as a byproduct of those. Is it productive for the? Is it more of a good for the precious metal miners to have other mining doing well? And is it? I mean, a rising tide lift all boats, or does all of a sudden if copper mining's more like profitable, that just leads to more silver being mined, which then depresses silver? I don't know. What do you make of this move in base metals? Is it, like I said, is it helpful or not?
Well, I think certainly with zinc, we've got an obvious, well-recognized deficit in supply versus demand. And that's been building up for a few years, and it's coming to a head now. The recent jump in the zinc price, and to some degree copper, I think has more to do with traders and speculators on the Shanghai Index mostly, who they were speculating in iron ore and steel, but they've changed the fee structure there so that it's not as conducive to owning steel and iron. So they're moving into the zinc and copper market, which I think is making it rise somewhat. So I think we're seeing a short-term blip in those two. But longer term, the zinc market, for sure, it can't supply demand. Copper, on the other hand, we've got, you know, I saw today we've got 13 weeks of supply sitting in warehouses right now. That's that's a fair amount. So I don't see copper in a real deficit in the near term, but in the long term, again, same problem. We are not finding enough copper to replace what we're mining. I mean, think about, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have seen the Bingham Copper Pit outside of Salt Lake. That's one of the biggest copper mines in the world. We are mining the equivalent of one of those every year, which means by default we have to find one of those every year.
Yeah.
It's not happening. So yeah, it looks good longer term. I agree.
Fair enough. Well, I tell you what, Brent, again, in this format, we do it this way just so that the listeners can ask the questions of the guests. I mean, it's rare you get the opportunity to interact with people directly like this. And so, again, on this GoToWebinar control panel that everybody has in front of them, if you're listening live, there's a questions tab. You click it, and then you type in whatever question that you have. It comes to me, and I relay it on to Brent, and then he'll tell you what he thinks, if anything, of any particular mining share. Now, before we get to those, and while people are adding those questions, I've got a handful of them that have been emailed to me from people that couldn't join us today, Brent. So, again, we'll just kind of go through these. Just and they'll skip around, and I'll just let you take them wherever you want to go. You ready?
Yep, ready to go.
All right. This first question is going to cover a lot of listener questions as well, because a lot of folks are wondering about Novo Resources. that's one Eric Sprott first told me about it maybe 6 weeks ago when they first started to announce some of the stuff they've got going on. And I know it's one of, if not his largest holding at this point. It's getting close. The stock's gone from 1 to 4, back to 3. Specifically, one of our long-term members, Stephen B. Horse, his specific question was, given that you've been out to the project, I guess, in, what is it, Australia? He said, how many more trench results will it take for you to be convinced of QH's theory on how the gold was deposited there? And what do you make of it at the end of the day?
All right, so I've known Quentin for a long time, Quentin Hand, and he actually worked with me in the letter for a year or so. You know, he's one of the best exploration geologists I know. There's a few parts of the story here. So I went out as soon as they released those results. I booked a ticket, went out there, and walked the property and got a good feel for what's going on. In terms of the genesis or how this gold was formed, his thesis in that it was formed with bacteria photosynthesis pulling the gold out of seawater, it makes more sense than any other theory I've heard, and I think it works.
Okay.
And that being the case, I have little doubt that this unit, it's a sedimentary unit called a conglomerate that extends for hundreds of kilometers, that a large portion of that is going to have gold mineralization in it, right? So we've got a big system. We've got, you know, tens of kilometers of mineralization. But the real question in the heart of what your guy wrote in is, how many holes or how many trenches is it going to take to convince me that this thing works, that it's economic? We know there's gold, but is it economic? And so the question we've got to answer is, what is the thickness of this unit? Is it 1 meter? Is it 5? Is it 15? Because you've got to think about this in terms of mining. A 1 meter unit is difficult to mine economically because you've got dilution of another meter, so you cut the grade in half. But if, say, you've got a 10 meter unit and you've got 1 or 2 meters of dilution, which is zero grade, it's not that big a deal. So we need to get the thickness, and then the grade is the next part, and that's going to be tough because it's nuggets. You know, this gold is widely scattered all over, and you can drill a hole one place and hit a nugget, step out 5 feet, and not get a nugget. But recent results suggest that there's fine grain gold in this as well. If that proves to be the case, it makes it much easier to estimate the resource and mine. So what I need to see is over hundreds of meters at one of the prospects, several, you know, 500 meters, consistent grade and thickness. And that gives us a feel for what the mineability is going to be, what the costs are going to be and such. And then if they can continue that at other locations, you know, kilometers away, it looks like it might be real. Now we've got to assume it's going to be open pit mining then going underground like a coal mine. So those are the economics we throw into it. But I bought some stock after going there. I think it's going to be a very volatile stock.
Yeah.
And I will probably buy some more if it gets cheap, if something negative news comes out that really isn't insignificant. So I'm watching it. I own it. I think there's a chance we've got a major discovery.
How long, just in your, I mean, just if you're just a guess, how long is it going to take from where they are now to where, you know, if everything looks great and they go into production and they start open pit and they dig it out of there, I mean, are they still a couple years away?
I think we're 6 months away from answering that question as to whether it's big and economic. And that's not going to tell us the resources and all that sort of thing. It's going to tell us if it's holding up, if the idea is holding up, if the thickness and grade is holding up. That's 6 months out. So he's got to get the licenses granted so he can do the work. He's got to get out there with a large diameter drill and drill a bunch of holes. He's got to trench a lot of it, got to map it, a lot of it. And consider, we're looking at, you know, tens, if not 100 kilometers of strike. It's got to be looking at.
Yeah.
So this is a long process, so I'm thinking 6 months, say January of next year, we should have a feel of whether this is a viable target or just an anomaly.
Yeah, it sounds like to me, Brent, that there's time. You know, I think there are a lot of folks on my site, they're like, damn, that thing went from 1 to 4 so fast, I missed it. There's going to be pullbacks like we've currently seen, and if you just follow the news flow or subscribe to Exploration Insights, you can use the next 6-8 months to slowly accumulate a position. And if it turns out to be a big deal, then, I mean, you're in early still. I mean, there's no sense chasing it at this point is kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. If you understand what's going on and understand the results, you'll have a much better shot at buying at the right time and not selling at the wrong time.
Yeah, right. All right, let me hit you. This next one comes from Seal Rock, and he's got 4 quick questions for you, so I'll just hit you with them one at a time so you don't have to try to remember them all. How's that? First, he says, how about Eurasian Minerals rebranding itself? Do you know anything about them?
I do. We own the stock in the newsletter, have for a long time. It's the company that follows this prospect generator model, whereby they generate ideas and then bring in partners to test those ideas. A smart way to do it. In that
they've got a. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You cut out, and I thought you were done. So I apologize. Say that again, Brent.
So they bring in partners to do the heavy lifting, basically to spend the big bucks, testing their conceptual targets on where a deposit is, and they maintain a piece of the property, a percentage, or a royalty. What they've been doing is converting everything to a royalty. So they change their name from
Eurasian Minerals to EMX Royalty Corp.
Yeah, so they're trying to focus and you know, gain some attention on this royalty play as opposed to an exploration company. It makes sense. They do have 2 royalties that are generating money, and they've got a number of things in the works that may eventually generate a royalty. So it makes sense.
How about other prospect generators, Bravada Gold and Terrace Resources?
I don't know either of those well enough to comment.
You might have lost Brent on his cell phone there for a second.
Oh, shoot, I'm sorry. I'm in the trees. I should be okay. But no, I don't know either of those two companies well enough to comment.
What do you think of Colombia as a mining region, and do you know anything about Angel Gold?
Colombia. I think geologically it's one of the best places to be. Politically and socially, it's getting more and more difficult. If you're going to explore in Colombia, you've got to be in the right place.
Okay.
Can't be up in the hills, up in the forests, where people have their farms, or somewhere around Medellin. I don't know Angel well enough to comment, I'm afraid.
And lastly, and I know we're going to get a couple questions about zinc producers. He wants to know about a company called Canadian Zinc, something called NZinc Mining. Know much about those?
You know, I wish I did. I know enough that I've looked at both of them and did not buy the stock. But if we're looking at a zinc play, those two will probably do pretty well.
Kootenay?
As a zinc price.
Do you know something called Kootenay?
Kootenay. They've got a silver project down in Mexico. Pan American, I believe, is involved in that. It's medium size, but it seems to be growing. They're finding new stuff around the main zone. So it seems to be doing all right. It's not one we own, though.
Okay. And last for the email questions came from Chris, who wanted to know what you thought about Continental Gold. Do you know anything about that one?
I do. I've been there twice. It's down in Colombia. They've got a very high-grade vein system. Newmont is not a partner. They own a bunch of shares. So they've got some interest in that respect. It's a nice high-grade vein deposit. They're on board, on side with the government, so it's being permitted. There are minor issues with local miners and such, but I don't think they're a big deal. So I think it's a deposit that will be developed and be profitable.
Put a check mark next to that one. Okay. Now, again, I've got, a dozen of these already in queue. So if anybody has a question, shoot them through me through the questions tab, and we'll pass them on to Brent. Brent, you are just being very helpful and very, very valuable, so I appreciate that. All right, Will has the first question in queue. We'd like to know Brent's current opinion regarding in their cash problems and their future economics of their Brucejack mine. The only thing about that one?
Oh, Pretium. Yes, I didn't hear the name of the company, Pretium. That's been a very controversial story. The mineralization, the gold, is, let's put it this way, something like 93% of the gold is contained in only 3% of the rock. I could have that wrong, but it's somewhere along those lines. So you're mining, call it 100 tons, and 3 of those tons are going to have the gold. That's, yeah, that could or could not be an issue if it's there. It's so erratic, though, that they can't say this is where the gold is.
Right.
So they got to mine the whole thing. So they've done a fantastic job of building the mine. They've got it done on time and, you know, a little bit over budget. It's operating. They'll be putting out their results, costs and such, and grade shortly. Is it going to work? I suspect it will, but really, I think it'll be a year before we know if I believe it's 17 grams a ton is actually the real grade they're mining, or what the real grade is. It's a very complicated deposit, and it'll be. I suspect it'll be a year before we have a good sense of what the actual grade and mining costs are going to be there.
Okay. Next one comes from Lynn. This is a company that I own. I actually spoke to these guys a couple times on the site. Brian Slesarczyk is the guy who, I think he's the president of K92 Mining, which is just now getting into production and all that kind of stuff, but the stock is down. So Lynn just wants to know if you know anything about K92.
I do. I looked at it when they pre-IPO, looked at it in a lot of detail. It's in Papua New Guinea. It's high-grade vein that nobody previously has made money on, and that's probably because they mined it wrong. I'm waiting to see if they can go in and actually make money on what the resource or reserve is on right now. I haven't seen that happen yet. We're waiting on results again. If they can show that they can profitably mine this vein, there's a lot of upside because there are a number of other veins in that district that haven't been drilled out and tested. So I think the exploration potential is great if they can prove they can mine it profitably right now. We haven't seen that yet. I'm waiting on the results. I noticed today that they've got a little dispute with the local landowners as to who gets what work and that sort of thing. That's always going to be an issue in New Guinea. Fortunately, they're past the stage in working with the Los Cocos as to who gets to eat who, and on to more jobs-related issues.
Well, I guess that one then kind of depends upon their geologist team and their experience and that kind of, which, you know, I guess that's probably the same in all these deals, right? You got to have the right people.
Pretty much. You've got to have the right people that know what they're doing and understand the rocks. You've got to have the rocks, you know, down pat, or there are issues that always come up. And we've seen a lot of those recently.
Got a question here about B2 gold. I know that's not one that I own, but I see it a lot of times on a holdings list of different mutual funds and ETFs and stuff. B2 gold, you know anything about that one?
I do. A fair bit. I've been to a number of their deposits. As larger companies go, I think this is probably one of the better, more aggressive mining companies. They've managed to buy good assets at a good price and put them in production and make money on them. Right now, their deposit in Mali is looking, it should do well. It'll be in production shortly. I think it's, as far as the larger mining companies go, this is one of the better ones.
Awesome. Kay has a question here. I'll just read this one to you. Kay's a big fan, by the way. She says, or she or he says, huge fan of Brent's work. With regard to majors not having enough reserves, wouldn't this make even low-grade expensive projects with large resource estimate accretive investment opportunities? Kay's obviously very smart. That's some awesome language there that I could not possibly use correctly. Accretive investment opportunities. Any particular thoughts on companies like International Tower Hill Mines, Chesapeake Gold, and Seabridge Gold?
Yes, that's a very good question, something we cover a lot in the newsletter and something I discuss quite often in presentations as well. Joe and I do not buy the leveraged asset plays, the mineral banks, as they call themselves, where you're betting on the optionality of the metal. That's not to say that the stock won't rise or fall based on the metal price, but for the most part, our experience has been that marginal deposits or uneconomic deposits generally stay that way regardless of the gold price, because there's a fundamental issue with these deposits that doesn't really get fixed by the gold price. You can look at like Tower Hill right now. Its NPV is negative. Chesapeake Gold, they've got a large deposit in Mexico, but it's low grade. It's double refractory, meaning there's two processes, expensive and difficult processes you have to go through to get the gold out of the rock, and it's in the middle of nowhere. There's no power. That will never be, in my opinion, that will never be economic.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole list of them, and companies that accumulate these out-of-the-money assets on the play that they will be economic someday. Well, maybe, maybe not. But if you're going to buy these leveraged plays, buy the ones that spend a lot of money on promotion, and those are the ones you probably know about, right?
Yeah.
That's what you want to watch for on those. Again, it's not something Joe and I buy, but I can see that there is a play to be made there on leverage to the middle price.
Yeah. All right. Daniel wants to know what your opinion is on, well, I mentioned him earlier, Keith Neumeyer, on First Majestic. It's gotten hit hard recently. I think it was an issue with labor in Mexico, but I don't recall for sure. But anyway, in general, at 650 or whatever it is, what do you think of First Majestic?
First Majestic is probably one of the better leveraged to silver plays. It's not a company we follow. We generally don't follow companies with multiple mines because it's just too hard to keep track of what's going what, right, what's going wrong, and whatever issue they had that really knocked it down from what $9 to $7 Canadian. I don't know what that was, but it must have been some sort of operational issue. Again, unless you're on the ground looking at these things, issues like that hit you blindsided. And so we don't really spend a lot of time on companies with multiple mines. Just, you know, we prefer exploration.
Yeah, that's hard to state, like you said. I mean, that's a lot of stuff for a two-man operation to stay on. You're just kind of at the mercy of the press releases on a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
Daniel's got a follow-up, and this is just a metals in general question. Why has palladium been so strong and platinum so weak, relatively speaking?
You know, I actually don't know the answer to that. I've seen it and I've wondered as well, but I don't know the answer to it. I mean, in general, as we go more and more to electric cars, the use of platinum palladium as a catalytic converter diminishes. So I don't see a big future for those metals, really.
Man, that palladium's been going like crazy. I mean, it's getting close, breaking out to all-time highs, which were like back in 2001 or something. Who knows what other things might be going on in the background. Infometron has a question about the British Columbia's Golden Quadrangle region. Okay, I guess. Are there companies in there that you like best, first in terms of potential and then second in terms of production?
Okay, it's the Golden Triangle. It's up in BC, and it's an extremely mineralized and altered area. I mean, that's where Pretium's Bruce Jack is. That's where Seabridge's deposit is. I've been up there a few times and looked at things. Right now there's a company called GTT that has what looks like a nice high-grade vein discovery. We don't own that one. We did for a while own Colorado Resources. We don't own that. And right now, I don't believe we do not own anything in the Golden Triangle. Not that it's not a potential. It's just it's hard to differentiate an anomaly from a real deposit. So, you know, those are the companies I'm aware of that are up there. You've got, there's a lot of companies up there working right now. It's a big, hot area.
Guy asked down the list here about Garibaldi Resources. Is that one you know of up there? Apparently they're up in that area.
Yeah, I think they're all over the place. But no, I don't know Garibaldi well enough to comment.
Okay. This is a list. Let me just pick up. How about Rye Patch Gold or Fortuna Silver?
Rye Patch has restarted. It's the Florida Canyon mine in Nevada. We're waiting to see how well they actually do. I suspect it'll make a bit of money. But again, it's not something we really put a lot of time into. This is an old mine that's been, I don't know how many times it's been restarted. And there you're just, you know, you're kind of betting on what's left and the metal price working for you. So it's not one that we own. Fortuna Silver, I know fairly well. I've been to all their operations. As far as silver mining companies go, actually silver and gold now, they're good miners. If I was to own a basket of gold and silver miners, that would be in it.
Fair enough. Hey, here's one that kind of was on my radar, and then in my tyranny of the urgent world fell off my radar, so I'm glad somebody asked. How about Tahoe in their deal, you know, with they've got the I guess it was Guatemala wanting to nationalize their stuff. I know Dave Kranzler said he talked to the CEO and then he told him everything was going to be fine. Apparently must not be fine yet. You know much about Tahoe?
I do. I've been to their deposits as well. Both great deposits. Certainly the one in Guatemala, Escobal, is one of the best silver discoveries in quite a long time. It's unfortunate that the government is sort of not really helping them in their dealing with the locals. And they've been shut down at that mine while some dispute plays out. I think or suspect it will be settled in Tahoe's favor eventually. But until then, you've got problems. So you're betting on a political and legal outcome, which, you know, to be honest, you know, none of us really know anything
right
about.
Right.
Who knows what they're going to do.
Yeah. Okay, I've got a couple left for you. Thank you. And again, thanks for being your willingness to just kind of blow through these. It's extraordinarily valuable. What do you think? Can this company called Red Eagle recover? Do you know anything about that one?
I do. Another one. It's in Colombia. I've been to their deposit. I've followed it but never bought it. I had issues with continuity. When I looked at it underground, I had issues with continuity in that it wasn't one vein. There are a number of, you know, separate veins. I was concerned about what would happen when they started mining it. Well, it didn't turn out well. Their mining plan didn't suit the rocks. They had way too much dilution, which means a lot of barren rock got thrown in with the mineralized rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've had to rejig the whole mine plan. They've had to raise a lot of money. And now they're in the process of going back in and re-mining or rebuilding the deposit. I don't know how that's going to come out. Overall, it's a modest grade, mediocre grade deposit. So it's probably not something that I'm going to buy anyway. The stock may do well if they can show they can mine this, but it's not one that I own.
Okay. And for anybody that came late, we addressed this earlier about the potential depth of that thing of Novo. It might be a meter, it might be 10 meters, and they've just got to get in there and figure it out. Isn't that what we said earlier? Something like that?
Pretty much. It's going to take 6 months before we have a sense of the thickness and grade of this conglomerate.
Got it.
That's what we're waiting on. Until then, it's going to be tough to know. And it's not an easy thing to sample.
Yeah, I would think. That's a labor-intensive deal in its own right. How about Precipitate Gold? Do you know that one?
I do. They're active down in Dominican Republic next to Gold Quest. Similar sort of mineralization. It's some sort of variety of a volcanic massive sulfide. They've had some interesting anomalies. They've drilled some holes. It hasn't, as yet, turned up anything of importance. So it's an exploration play. Certainly hard-working, decent group, but I haven't seen anything there that makes me want to buy it yet.
Okay. And let's see. Do you know anything about Mirasol Resources or New Carlin Resources?
What was the second one?
I might have lost you again, Brett.
I'm sorry, Craig. What was the second company?
Uh-oh. There, you're back. Okay, I lost you there for a little while. Parasol and New Carolyn Resources.
Okay, I know Mirasol well. In fact, that's probably my single largest holding. Oh. I worked with the president, Steve Nano, in Argentina and Chile and Australia, so I know him really well. He's one of the best exploration geologists that I know. His company is turning up big scale, big targets, new targets. They're not recycling any old stuff and bringing larger companies in to spend the big bucks testing them. They've got porphyry copper plays in Chile. They've got gold and silver plays in Chile and Argentina. They've got 20-odd million bucks in the bank. I don't see an immediate catalyst, but you never know. Like I said, this is my biggest holding. I think that probably sells as much as you can say about it.
Yeah, absolutely. How about Endeavor Silver? They've been kind of pushed back pretty good lately.
Another silver company. It's not much different than First Majestic in that they, you know, they've got a number of mines operating in Mexico. They're narrow vein for the most part. Things go right, things go wrong. It's not something that I can predict or see coming. So we don't own them. But, again, as a silver basket, that's one I would throw in there.
Okay. Here's another Eric Sprott favorite. He's the chairman of a company called Kirkland Lake. They've been hitting some new all-time highs. Do you own that one?
We did. We owned it via when they took over a company that we own, Lakeshore. It was interesting. When Joe joined up Exploration Insights, we recognized we thought we were at the low. And so we bought about five companies small mining companies that were actually producing and such that we figured the majors would buy. And they all five got bought, so we were fortunate in that respect. One of them being Kirkland Lake, bought Lakeshore. They bought Newcastle.
Newcastle.
No, it wasn't Newcastle either. What the heck?
No, I don't know. Something that sounded right. Well, regardless, whatever it was.
Anyway, they bought this company in Australia that had a nice deposit. It's working really well. They're hitting high grade where they didn't know it was. And I think Kirkland Lake is going to do quite well on that deposit. They got enough money and smarts to buy something else, and I'm sure they're looking. So I like that one. I don't own it. We sold it when we were bought out by Kirkland.
Newmarket is the one somebody said that's what they were
Newmarket.
Called.
Newmarket. That's right. I'm sorry, Newmarket.
How about do you have a favorite royalty company of, I guess, the main ones that people thinks about?
Well, certainly the best is Franco Nevada. I just leave it at that. Actually, and Sandstorm. Sandstorm is a much smaller company. I still own that one. They bought Mariana Resources, which is a company we held. We did really well on that. But I think Sandstorm is undervalued right now, so I'm holding on to a piece of the Sandstorm I received from the Mariana buyout.
I got one more for you, and then I'll stop, I promise, because you've been very generous with your time. This Klondike or Klondex, everybody was excited about a couple of days ago. You know anything on that one?
I suspect you mean Klondike. They've got a project up in the Yukon.
Yeah.
Peter Talman, the president, is a good guy. I like him. He's a smart geologist. He's rethinking the geologic setting up there. And he's come up with a new plan, a new idea that he's testing that seems to be holding up. Now, they've released some pretty good holes and then some not so good holes. The pretty good holes are over a relatively, I think it's like 100 or 200 meter zone. And then moving out from there, it tends to die off. But he's drilling a lot of holes up there, and it's certainly one worth watching to see if they can come up with something economic. And here's the deal. When you look at results, you've got to have in the back of your mind what it's going to take to mine it. What grade is it going to make to work? So here we've got probably open pit, high strip once you get started into it, meaning how much waste to ore you have to move.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be – it's not free – it's free milling. That's good, but it's going to need a mill. So you have to build a mill and process it that way, maybe with a gravity circuit at the front. So, you know, you add all that up, decent location, and I figure for a deposit to work up there, you need maybe a million to a million and a half ounces at 1.5 grams or better. So that's what we're looking for, to see that work.
All right. Again, lastly, we'll use this as a good last question because it's more – big picture, I guess, than company specific. It comes from Clark Eye. Just wants to know, what is the main thing that you've learned from Joe about the business side of mining that maybe has changed your approach toward investing, and what lesson can regular mining investors take from that?
Wow, that's a tough question.
I thought it was a good one, though.
It's a good one. I hadn't thought about it before. But what Joe brought to the letter, I think, is his background with the majors. So he knows what the majors are looking for. He knows how they think. And our investment thesis, our exit strategy, preferred exit strategy, is to have a major buy our deposit.
Mm-hmm.
So he's brought to the letter that aspect. I mean, he worked with Newmont as their new acquisitions guys. He worked with Placer Dome as their metal analyst. He worked with MIM as an exploration geologist. He's been an analyst with Haywood and Canaccord, so he's got a well-rounded view of the money side of things. So what he's brought is we can look at a project and say, is this a place where a company would come in and buy? Who are the likely buyers of it, and what do they need to see in terms of economic size and grade to make it worth their while to come in and buy it? So we've got a hurdle, if you will, that we need to see in different countries and different localities that really helps a lot in our screening of projects and companies. So I think that's what he's brought. And it's been a real help.
Yeah.
Plus he writes a lot. He loves graphs and charts, so he's added a lot to the letter.
And in terms of the, I guess maybe not so much in exploration companies, but you know, these bigger ones, the producers always seem to work with the bullion banks and sell their products to them one way or the other. Is, when you get down the scale farther though, how tired are the exploration companies to getting financed?
It's improved. Certainly there's more money being raised this year than last. It's not great, and it's very specific. You know, the turkeys aren't being financed, just as, I guess is how I could put it.
I lost you there for a second, Brent. You said something about the turkey.
I say the turkeys aren't getting financed yet, and that's a positive point.
Got it. Fair enough. All right. Well, you've been, like I said, extraordinarily generous, and this is extremely valuable information you've shared. But on the way, you've got to hit the final four, which is four fun, quick questions. Usually you can answer in a word or a sentence. So if you're ready to go, can I hit you with those?
All right. Let's go.
All right. Who stays in power longer, Trump or Kim Jong-un?
My feeling is within a year and a half, Trump gets hauled out in a straitjacket.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe he outlasts Un?
I don't know about that.
That'd be a good question if you're an online bookie. You know what? You could probably do that.
I'm sure you can do it in Vegas right now.
You're probably right. Okay. I think they're both dead now, so that's going to be tough to do. But regardless, on a scale of 1 to 5 stars, how many would you give the movie Gold?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. It wasn't geologically accurate, but it's a good story, and I'd give it 4 stars.
Do you know those dudes back in the day?
Only a few of them. I was mostly working in South America at that time.
See, because you have been around for a while. All right. It's almost football season, Brent. Who's going to win Super Bowl 52?
Well, I'm a big fan of the Broncos, so I'll go with the Broncos.
All right. And it's almost lunchtime, so if I'm making you a sandwich, is it going to be roast beef or turkey?
Roast beef, thanks.
That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I'm getting hungry myself.
My head out, too.
That was fabulous. Again, www.explorationinsights.com is the website, correct?
That's correct. And there's a lot of reports and stuff that you can read for free and get a feel for what we do, and certainly happy to help. Our, you know, half of our business isn't giving stock tips, it's education. So we try and help people learn things.
It's fabulous. Again, everybody, please check it out. And if you're in the sector and you're just trying to read drill results and stuff, unless you're an expert and you've been doing it for years, it's pretty hard to do. Eric Sprott once told me about, he said, you ought to look at the drill results for Kirkland Lake. And I was like, right. That's going to mean as much to me as, you know, reading something in Latin. So there's it takes a lot of expertise to be able to pull the, you know, the pepper out of the rat poop sometimes. And you're certainly able to do it. So I want everybody to check it out. Brent, thank you so much again for all of your time and expertise. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Greg. It's a real pleasure.
And for everybody listening, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you during A to A again next week.